Today's Perek in Tanakh is Shoftim, Perek Yud Dalet. We've gotten to a very important crossroads in this Sefer, and it's time to take a look before we continue at what has happened. You'll notice that the first part of the Sefer basically describes the continuation of the period of Yeshua, even to the point of actually repeating, word for word, some of the conquests that took place at the time of Yeshua. It concentrates on the Miyale Rishon, on the continued Milchama of Yehuda, together with Shimon, in which they continued the Kivush Ha'aretz and took what areas they could, other areas they couldn't. The next section describes the lackadaisical attitude of the remaining Shvatim in conquering the areas that had been left for them, and in fact turns into a times even a diatribe, and at other times a background tension of those Shvatim that were willing to fight along with the Klal when necessary, and those Shvatim that seemed to have made their peace completely with the goyim that were around them. We can call that middle period the Brit Imaknani, in a sense, because all those who were involved in the fighting were interested in completing the, if not the actual kibush, but at least completing the shlita of Yisrael over the Knani. They were all wrong in not completing the kibush, and instead agreeing to allow the Knani to dwell within them. But the other Shvatim were involved in their own lives, so that Dan Yaguroniot, that the Dan apparently was involved in shipping off of the port of Yafo in that area, perhaps even together with the Knani. Asher was also involved up and down the coast of Lebanon, together with the Phoenicians, very much not involved. Reuven, not involved. Those were on the other side of the Yarden, except for the wars of Manasseh, and there too there was anger from Ephraim at the fact that there was no army, no Isachtus. Whatever Shevet had been making a Shofet, it was a short-lived event, and there was clearly a deep desire to have somebody that was in charge, so that there were times at which there was a request, even, for Memshala, something that Gideon had rejected, something that Avimelech wanted. This was basically the period that brought us all the way up to the story of Shimshon. Each one of these Shoftim acted on behalf not only of his own area, but for all of the Shvatim that were interested in participating in the war against the Kanani. What has happened now, however, starting from the story of Shimshon, is that there is no longer an individual who calls together all of Yisrael. In fact, we have an Ish Echad. The individual becomes the Shofet of Yisrael, specifically does not want to involve the rest of Yisrael. He is interested in weakening, not the Knani, but the Plishtim. And as we pointed out before, this period of the Plishtim is basically descriptive of a war that will go on until David HaMelech himself manages to finally bring them under the power of Yisrael. The Plishtim and the Knanim are two very, very different stories indeed. So that in the Knanim, the only time we had a true gathering together in which there was an attempt to actually perhaps take over the area that the Jews had taken over, those Knanim were together with Sisera and were brought rapidly under control. And that was Charoshet HaGoyim, together with all of those who normally were mercenaries and who came to the aid of Sisera. In such contrast to the Shiftei Yisrael, as Dvorah points out, who did not come to the aid when they were asked. The attacks by Ammon on behalf of Moab, these were small events, relatively. But the major geopolitical changes in the world that were reflected by the new arrival of the Plishtim, that changed everything. Essentially, what had happened until now is that all of the events were basically local events, because, as we mentioned, Klal Yisrael was viewed still as a child in school. And so the main movements, the upheavals of history that we find later in time, when Klal Yisrael is more matured, so that entire empires move only to the order of what is necessary in terms of the attack on Klal Yisrael, the building on Klal Yisrael, whether we're talking about the Greeks or the Romans, or we're talking about the Persians or the Kastim. These were massive movements that we understood all along, as the Gemara says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu needed to be making those who would be the ones that would keep Yisrael in Golus and bring them up from nowhere in order to be world empires. As long as the first period of Shoftim went on, we did not hear of major empires that we needed to fight, nor massive geopolitical change that affected Yisrael. The first time that there is such a change is with the new invasion of the Plishtim. Obviously, there were Plishtim all along in the coastal areas of Eretz Yisrael. But from this point on, we're going to find that the Plishtim actually invade and continue to take over the areas that once belonged to Canaan, so that all around Eretz Yisrael, the Plishtim are shalit, even in the most powerful of the Shvatim, so that Yehuda as well is under the thumb of the Plishtim. Historically speaking, this is indeed a major, major change that came because of the fact that the Plishtim, who were originally the dwellers along the edges of the Mediterranean and the islands of the Mediterranean, the Greek islands, were actually pushed out by the arrival of tribes that were associated later with the Greeks and moved across the Mediterranean until they came to all of the areas, including Mitzrayim, including the Phoenician areas, and Eretz Yisrael. The growth of the population of the Plishtim had turned cities that had previously been under the Shlita of Yisrael into cities that were completely Plishti in their orientation. It was not possible at this time, without an army, to actually attack the Plishtim themselves, who were warrior tribes and who had far more interest than the Canaanim in expansion. And in fact, if you take a look at the word Plishtim, they come from the word palash, which means to invade, to break into, to penetrate. And indeed, this is what they were. And so what happens is that we come to a new period, and this new period is the end of Sefer Shoftim. You'll notice that the end of the Nachala of the Shvatim in Yehoshua was Shevet Dan. And that's because Dan is the Ma'asef L'Kol HaMachanot. It's the end, the last, the ones that went all the way in the back as we marched through the Midbar. They were therefore also, as the Medrash points out, the last to take their chelek in Yehoshua. But they are also the last to appear here in Shoftim, among the Shoftim. And in many ways, they are precursors of the events to come. The first thing that happens is that they're making Shimshon. Shimshon is not there in order to destroy the Plishtim. He is there, again, as the Pasuk makes it very clear, Yachel. He is there to begin. Vatachel Ruach Hashem Lefa'amo. It began now to ring within him. He was a beginner. And the important part of that beginning is that it began in every sense, the developments that were to come. The last part of the Sefer come to actually touch upon the issues that Dan achieves. And remember that Dan is considered to be the equivalent in terms of Malchut to Yehuda. Therefore, Yehuda is in fact compared to the lion, and Dan indeed is called a Gur Aryeh, just as Gur Aryeh Yehuda. Just as Dan is considered to be a Gur Aryeh Zanek Min HaBashan, so too is it Gur Aryeh Yehuda in the words of Yaakov Avinu. And Dan, indeed, as Yaakov Avinu said, Dan Yadin Amo Kechad Shiftei Yisrael, which we're told means Kim Yuchad Shebishvatim, as Rashi explains. That means the greatest of the Shvatim, like Yehuda itself. And therefore, we'll see many, many other things in which what we are dealing with over here are in a state of Asifa, the things that we'll need to deal with later in the creation of the Malchus of Yehuda. What we deal with here is the closure of the Yerusha elements, which will come to very shortly in Dan, of all the Shvatim, and with the beginning of the Malchus elements, which of course is also the other piece of the closing of the Sefer, and that is the story of Pelegish Begiva, which actually came before this entire story of Shimshon, and is placed at the end because we begin with the Yashar Be'inav, which we're about to discover in Shimshon, and go then to the period in which Isha Yashar Be'inav Yaseh, which applies both to the Yerusha of Dan and to the beginning of Malchus in Pelegish Begiva. This is your overall sense of what the Sefer is, and it will become clearer to you as we go on. Since this is Lamaisa, a family shir, because many people are learning this together with their families, I just want to warn you about this next piece, because it's unavoidably explicit, and because of that, you may want to actually censor some of these issues beginning right now. Now, you'll remember that the other element of Dan, of course, is that he Dan Nachash Aleder. And as Chazal tell us, a Nachash, one of the most important things of the Nachash is that a Nachash is a phallic symbol. The Nachash is meant to be Matsui Ben Hanashim. I have a whole sugi in the Gemara about the strange relationship of the phallic Nachash and its connection to women, which of course is all merumas in the connection to Chava and Gan Eden. The Nachash slept with Chava, Hita Vazuama, and in fact the word Chava itself is precisely the same as the word for Nachash in Aramaic, which is Chivia. And so, sure enough, as soon as Shimshon is born, Vateled Aisha Ben, Vatikrat Shemo Shimshon, Vayigdal Hanar Vayavarachehu Hashem, as we saw in the last parak, that this is the strangest bracha in history. It means that he was given an incredible phallus. Borcho Ba'amato. However, says the Gemara, Ba'amato means that he may have looked like any other human being, but Hayazar O Kenachal Shotef, he had an incredible capacity for sex, and that capacity becomes central to the entire story. Not surprisingly, just as we find a concept of asifa, which is the collection, the bringing together, just as Shlomo HaMelech was the ma'asef, we call him therefore Kohelet, bringing together, collecting from all of the Umayyad Ha'ilam, the ma'asef, the Kalamachanes, was also the one, the shevet, that was capable of bringing in elements, even from the Plishtim themselves. But what he needed to do as an individual, for all he wanted to show, and what was necessary to show, is that the Plishtim are defeatable, and they are defeatable by any Yisrael, even as a Yachid, and that all that is missing for the Am to defeat them is to be an Am that can defeat. And as long as it's only a Yachid, then only the Yachid will defeat. So it was because of this, and because of the promise that had been made between Avimelech and Avram Avinu, Avimelech and Yitzchak Avinu. These were commitments that had been made by the Plishtim to the descendants of Avram Avinu, and by those descendants on the part of Avram and Yitzchak towards the Plishtim. It was therefore necessary for him to fight the Plishtim only as a Yochid, for there was no way that Yisrael was organized to fight the Plishtim. He needed to constantly show that this was entirely a personal battle that had nothing to do with Plishtim or non-Plishtim. It was just a Jew who was fed up. And he needed as well to be able not only to show how it was possible for a single superhero to defeat the Plishtim, but also how it was possible for a soldier, just as he could take a Yefas Tor in the Machane, that in the Machane Dan, it was possible indeed to absorb even the Bnota Arelim of the Plishtim. And so our parak begins with the rather astonishing story of Shimshon and his marriage to a girl who was from the Plishtim. Vayered Shimshon Timnata vayarisha b'Timnata mibnot Plishtim. And so Shimshon went down to the town of Timnata, which is also called Timna. Now, of course, as the Gemara points out, how interesting, for the exact same thing was said of Yehuda when he went to create the Malchut. Hine chamich ole Timnata. And that is exactly how Tamar hears about it. In both cases, Timna becomes a place of surprising sexual non-standard behavior, in which Yehuda goes now to a Zonah, in which now Shimshon goes to a Bat Plishtim, and as the Gemara points out, what's strange is that by Shimshon it says Vayered Shimshon Timnata, and by Yehuda it says Ole Timnata. And the difference is that Yehuda, who ultimately fathers the Malkus from Timna, and therefore Yehuda Shenit Alaba, indeed it says Aliyah, Shimshon in the end, who is destroyed through his sexual proclivity, it says to him, Yerida. Of course, this doesn't mean that there's not a simple pshat, as the Gemara says. There's a Timna that it's in the middle of the mountain. You go up from one side, down from the other side. But the stress in the pasuk is indicative of the difference, and also indicative of the fact that the relationship between Yehuda and between Shimshon is profound. It's because of this that the Gemara tells us as well, that Medrash tells us as well, that the mother of Shimshon, Eshet Manoah, was from Yehuda. It was his father and only his father who came from Shevet Dan. And that itself, of course, is a remarkable event, because until now, in the second portion of the Sefer, we were talking about a non-national way of looking at things. It was each shevet for themselves. Here is the first time that we look upon the birth of someone from a mixed marriage, so to speak, as being not only not unusual, but the beginning of Yeshua. It's only at the end, in Pelegish Begiva, that Klal Yisrael finally comes for the first time to respond as a nation from the days of Bnei Gad uVnei Reuven. And so he goes down to Timna, Vayarisha b'Timnata mibnot Plishtim, and he sees a woman there in Timna who comes from the Plishtim. Vayal, and so he goes back up, Vayaged la'aviv l'imo, he tells his father and his mother, Vayomer isha ra'iti b'Timnata mibnot Plishtim, v'atakechu otali li'isha. Take this woman for me as a wife. Now there is a machloket as to whether this was a goyish woman. This machloket in the Yerushalmi, in the Bavli. Is there an iser of marrying a woman who is non-Jewish? Or is the iser of chitun limited to the seven umays of Canaan? And it does say seven times, a reference to the seven umays that were part of Lo Titchaten Ba. So indeed, in the Yerushalmi, the Gemara is Medayek, that it says seven times, B'shiva makomot k'tiv lo titchatein bam. There's a remez, it doesn't really say lo titchatein bam seven times, but there's a lot of work to identify which psukim the Yerushalmi is referring to. And there, Amar Rabbi Lesor Shiva Amami. It's only an Isser on the Shiva Amami, but it's not an Isser on the Benot Plishtim. And yet we find terrible things happening to him. And the Gemara says, why would that be? If there was no Isser, the right of marrying the Benot Plishtim, there wasn't even an Isser in terms of marriage. Lo titchatein, koshekein, no Isser in midiraita of simply sleeping with a Plishtim. And so, says Rabbi Yitzchak, because of the fact that he was mitchaber to such people, im laleitzim hu yalitz, you want to be a late, low class, cool, HaKadosh Baruch Hu ends up laughing at you. According to those shitas that lamaisa, there is an isur d'oraita of chitun, shelo b'derech znus, but of actually marrying a woman who is not Jewish, those shitas understand that what happened over here must have been that he indeed was Megayer, the women that he ultimately married, much as we find by the sugya of Yefat Torah. His mother and father were understandably not too happy about this. You can't find anywhere in Klal Yisrael. Okay, I understand. In your own shevet, maybe, bivnot achecha. But how about anywhere? We're not against marrying a woman from any shevet. You can't find a woman that you should be going now to take a woman from the plishtim who are arelim. You'll notice that this is really, interestingly, the first time that the stress, in terms of the connection, is about the arelim. It's from this point on that we'll have a lot of mention about the arelim. And this is the plishtim, always called the plishtim ha'arelim. And this will continue on, and even in terms of the songs, benot ha'arelim, kol ha'goyim ha'arelim, as the Navi will call it. And this, on the simple level, it could be indeed that there was not 100% arelut among the Knani. It could be that there were not so, not perhaps 100%, that they were mulim, that there appears to be records that they were mal, but it appears on a deeper level that it's specifically the Dan Nachash that now has to stress the nature of the arelut of the plishtim in terms of the connection. No, this is the woman because she is, here is the opening to the whole period. And it is this that cost Shimshon in the end his eyes. She is good in my eyes. His parents had no idea that this entire event was actually coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And all of this had been put into his heart as part of the tikkun of taking the plishtim and of beginning the Yeshua from the plishtim. And they did not know ki to'ana hu mevakesh bi plishtim. This would be the way in which there would be an excuse and an opening to be able to attack the plishtim without its being a national event and without its being hafara v'shvu'a. Ube'etahi plishtim moshlim bi Yisrael. And indeed, the plishtim were in this state, they were actually the moshlim. This is the first time that we've had such a sense of complete rulership. Plishtim were in charge of Am Yisrael, and therefore there was no way that he could attack without a national attack, no way to attack the plishtim. Vayered Shimshon ve'aviv imo timnata, vayavo at karme timnata v'nekvir arayot sho'eg likrato. Shimshon, his father, and his mother, they go down to Timna, and they get up to the Kerem in Timna. This is a remez that he would go no further, because as a Nazir, he would not go near a Kerem. And so his father and mother continued on alone to begin the negotiations with the parents of the young lady that he had met in Timna. And he stayed there by himself. And as a remez, indeed, to the nature of Dan, the Gur Aryeh, in a Kvir Arayot Sho'eg Likrato, a Gur Aryeh, which is a Kvir Arayot, comes now roaring, and he is there all alone. Vatitzlach alav ruach Adonai vayishasa'eil kishasa'agdi umu'umayin biyado. Suddenly is filled with this immense spirit of strength, and our superhero comes to life as he grabs now from its hind legs the Aryeh, rips it into two pieces the way that one rips apart a gedi, which you're skinning, without having even a knife in his hand. And he kept it entirely quiet, for he recognized that this was not either. Some say that he didn't even consider this to be such a great thing. For him it was nothing. Or was an element of tzniut that he would not say. Vayered vayedaber liyisham vatishar be'enei shimshon. And so after now the discussions between the parents had went well, he comes now to meet the woman and to talk to her, and indeed decides, this is the one for me. Vayoshov miyamim lakachta, and so after a period, miyamim, which might be a year, which is the normal amount of time that is given to a woman to prepare for marriage, he comes now to take her, and on the way, vayoser lirot et matpelat aryeh, he comes to see what is left of the dried up remnants of the lion that he had killed. Vineadat dvorim bigviyat aryeh udvash. And there inside of the aryeh is a hive of bees that have taken up residence inside of the carcass of the aryeh. Vayirideo el kapav, and so he took the honey down onto the honeycomb now was in his hands. Vayelech aloch v'yachol, and there he went, happily eating away on the honey. Vayelech el aviv elimo v'yiten lehem v'yochel, going to his father and mother, and gave them, and they too ate. V'lo yigit lehem miki migviyat aryeh rada hadvash, but said nothing about the fact that he had gotten this out of an event that was a turning point in his life. Vayered aviv el ha'isha, vayaz sham shimshon, and so his father went down now and set up all of the wedding rules. They would have to decide how much was being given by the various sides, and the minhag in those days were to make a bachelor's party. The bachorim would make an immense party, and so Shimshon went and made this party. When they saw him coming, they then selected 30 boys that would be now the ones who would be his friends for the bachelor. Now this itself was not the correct way of paying respect to the Chatan, because normally the friends that he would have were not just appointed and to be the friends only for the party. They would have taken some interest in the Chatan. They would have been the ones that had gone with him, were malave him, and would have cared for him, and therefore would have known what had happened with the Aryeh, would have known more about him, would have been more respectful of him. And he would show them how it is they had treated him. And so, Vayomer lahem Shimshon, Achudana lachem chita. I have an idea. How about if I give you a riddle? If you can tell me before the end of the 7 days, and this becomes now one of the mekoros for Sheva Brochas, if you can give them to me, the answer, within the Shivas Yimei HaMishteh, Umatzatem, V'natati Lechem 30 Sedinim, U'Shloshim Chalifot Begadim, then I will give you 30 sheets. A sheet was not what we call a sheet, something that you simply sleep on. A sheet was something that you used to cover yourself in the day. It was used to put on things all over the place as you went around. It was an all-around useful beged. And then shloshim chalifot begadim, 30 chalifot. We use chalifa in the sense of a fancy suit. And the truth is, it does have something to do with that, because the chalifa is clothing that you put on for special events. So clothing that you're mitchalef, clothing that you change into. So it would mean an entire set now, 30 sets of the type of formal wear that you would wear to an event. However, on the other hand, if you cannot answer my riddle, you will have to give me 30 of these dinim, 30 chalifot, vayomer lo, okay, chuda chitatcha v'nishmayena, let's go, we're ready. Vayomer lahem, and he told them, okay, here's my riddle. Meha'ochel yatsa ma'achal, u'me'az yatsa matok. From that which eats, this doesn't come across very well in English, but in Hebrew it's beautiful. By stressing the final syllable, instead of ochel, it's ochel, that which eats, the predator. So from the predator came the food. Umeaz yatzamatok, and from that which is so sharp came out that which is so sweet. V'loyachlu la'agid achida shloshet yamin, they couldn't give an answer for 3 days. Obviously that means that this thing had, it was the next pasuk is vayibayom ha'shvi'i. There's two ways of understanding this. One is that he only asked this question after they were already high in the third day, which we usually see as shloshes yamim, at the ikar time of the simcha, so they got high the third day, he said this over to them. And then three more days brings us to the seventh day. Or we can learn as others do that by Yom HaShvi'i is Yom HaShvi'i of the week. It was Shabbos. And it was on Shabbos that he wasn't around. And it was then that they could speak to Eshet Shimshon to insist that she give over what it was that she had learned about the riddle. And so, vayhi vayom ha'shvi'i, they couldn't say for the next 3 days anything. When it came the seventh day, vayomer la'ishet Shimshon, they told Shimshon's wife, patiyat ishech v'yaged lanu et achida, you better seduce your husband and get this out of him. Penisrof utach v'beit avich ba'esh, if you don't want us to take revenge, burning you and the whole family's home down. Hal yorshenu karatem lanu, hello? Huh? Did you call us here for what? This was supposed to be fun. Did you call us here in order to make us poor or to do you the formalities? Now it appears from the next pasuk that she all along had felt betrayed that he didn't tell her the riddle. And so she was crying even from the beginning.
You hate me. You don't love me.
You tell everybody this riddle. You didn't share it with your wife. And he says, I didn't even tell it to my mother, my father. I'm going to tell it to you. It's a very private thing. And so it appears from the use of Shivata Yamim that this means she was already begun driving him nuts from the beginning, and they were just trying to take advantage of what they figured she had already found out. It's also possible, however, to learn, as some of the Mefarshim do, Shivata Yamim means for the remainder of the Sheva Bracha, so for the Shiva Sayomim. So she continued to drive him crazy. All of the days that they had the partying, finally, on the seventh day, she was absolutely driving him bananas. And so he finally told her, and she tells it over to the other plishtim. And so, just before sunset, they tell him, well, what could be sweeter than honey? And what could be more powerfully bitter than a lion? He said to them, if you hadn't been plowing around with my little egla, you would never have known my riddle. Of course, charashtem is a double meaning. Charashtem, the simple meaning is to plow. Egla means my little girl, as opposed to kifsa, which is used for Jewish girls, sweet. Mary had a little lamb. Here he uses egla. But of course, that's the meaning of charashtem. Charashtem is choresh aven, people who plan, who dig in, who spy things out. You would never have known, because he didn't carry not to know. But titzlach alav ruach Adonai, and so, once again he got filled with the amazing superhero spirit. Vayered Ashkelon, he went down to a different city in Ashkelon, which was also the Plishtim. You'll notice that Timna, at this time, was a city of Plishtim, even though before it was listed as a Jewish city. We've already seen the tentacles of the Plishtim now coming into areas that had previously been Jewish. And so he went to a place where he could not be traced. And so he murders 30 of the plishtim, takes now their clothing, and he gives it to them, all right. He's furious, and goes to his father's home. Meanwhile, in the family of the plishtim, they are convinced that Shimshon is finished with them. And so they gave the wife of Shimshon to the very man who was in charge of those who had figured out the riddle, his supposed friend.